Chapter 12. Certainly do not. I have only a saddle horse here today, but come to the Flower de Luce, and I'll hire a trap, and drive you home with me. Tess, though flattered, had never quite got over her original mistrust of him, and, despite their tardiness, she preferred to walk home with the work folk. So she answered that she was much obliged to him, but would not trouble him. Have said that I will wait for him, and they will expect me to now. Very well, Miss Independence. Please yourself, then I shall not hurry. My good lord, what a kick up they are having there. He had not put himself forward into the light, but some of them had perceived him, and his presence led to a slight pause, and a consideration of how the time was flying. As soon as he had relit a cigar and walked away, the Trantridge people began to collect themselves from amid those who had come in from other farms and prepared to leave in a body. Their bundles and baskets were gathered up, and half an hour later, when the clock chime sounded a quarter past 11, they were straggling along the lane which led up the hill towards their homes. It was a 3-mile walk along a dry white road, made whiter tonight by the light of the moon. Tess soon perceived as she walked in the flock, sometimes with this one, sometimes with that, that the fresh night air was producing staggerings and serpentine courses among then men who had partaken too freely. Some of the more careless women also were wandering in their gait, to wit, a dark virago, Car Darch, dubbed Queen of Spades, till lately a favorite of D'Urberville's. Nancy, her sister, nicknamed the Queen of Diamonds, and the young married woman who had already tumbled down. Yet however terrestrial and lumpy their appearance just now to the mean unglamored eye, to themselves the case was different. They followed the road with a sensation that they were soaring along in a supporting medium, possessed of original and profound thoughts, themselves and surrounding nature forming an organism, of which all the parts harmoniously and joyously interpenetrated each other. They were as sublime as the moon and stars above them, and the moon and stars were as ardent as they. Tess, however, had undergone such painful experiences of this kind in her father's house, that the discovery of their condition spoilt the pleasure she was beginning to feel in the moonlight journey. Yet she stuck to the party, for reasons above given. In the open highway they had progressed in scattered order, but now their route was through a field gate, and the foremost finding a difficulty in opening it, they closed up together. This leading pedestrian was Car the Queen of Spades, who carried a wicker basket containing her mother's groceries, her own draperies, and other purchases for the week. The basket being large and heavy, Car had placed it for convenience of porterage on the top of her head, where it rode on in jeopardized balance as she walked with arms akimbo. "Well, whatever is that a creeping down thy back, Car Darch?" said one of the group suddenly. All looked at Car. Her gown was a light cotton print, and from the back of her head a kind of rope could be seen descending to some distance below her waist, like a Chinaman's queue. "'Tis her hair falling down," said another. No, it was not her hair. It was a black stream of something oozing from her basket, and it glistened like a slimy snake in the cold still rays of the moon. "'Tis treacle," said an observant matron. Treacle it was. Car's poor old grandmother had a weakness for the sweet stuff. Honey, yes, he had in plenty out of her own hives, but treacle was what her soul desired, and Car had been about to give her a treat of surprise. Hastily lowering the basket, the dark girl found that the vessel containing the syrup had been smashed within. By this time there had arisen a shout of laughter at the extraordinary appearance of Car's back, which irritated the dark queen into getting rid of the disfigurement by the first sudden means available, and independently of the help of the scoffers. She rushed excitedly into the field they were about to cross, and flinging herself flat on her back upon the grass, began to wipe her gown as well as she could, by spinning horizontally on the herbage, and dragging herself over it upon her elbows. The laughter rang louder, they clung to the gate, to the posts, rested on their staves, in the weakness engendered by their convulsions at the spectacle of Carr. Our heroine, who had hitherto held her peace, at this wild moment, could not help joining in with the rest. It was a misfortune in more ways than one. No sooner did the Dark Queen hear the soberer, richer note of Tess among those of the other workpeople than a long smoldering sense of rivalry inflamed her to madness. She sprang to her feet and closely faced the object of her dislike. "How darest th laugh at me, hussy," she cried. "I couldn't really help it when others did," apologized Tess, still tittering. "Ah, th apostrophe st think th beast everybody, doesn't, because th beast first favorite with he just now. But stop a bit, my lady, stop a bit. I'm as good as two of such. Look here, here's a D." To Tess's horror, the Dark Queen began stripping off the bodice of her gown, which for the added reason of its ridiculed condition she was only too glad to be free of, till as he had bared her plump neck, shoulders, and arms to the moonshine, under which they looked as luminous and beautiful as some Praxitelian creation, in their possession of the faultless rotundities of a lusty country girl. She closed her fists and squared up at Tess. "Indeed, then, I shall not fight," said the latter majestically, "and if I had known you was of that sort, I wouldn't have so let myself down as to come with such a horage as this is." The rather too inclusive speech brought down a torrent of vituperation from other quarters upon fair Tess's unlucky head, particularly from the Queen of Diamonds, who, having stood in the relations to D'Urberville that Carr had also been suspected of, united with the latter against the common enemy. Several other women also chimed in, with an animus which none of them would have been so fatuous as to show, but for the rollicking evening they had passed. Thereupon, finding Tess unfairly browbeaten, the husbands and lovers tried to make peace by defending her, but the result of that attempt was directly to increase the war. Tess was indignant and ashamed. She no longer minded the loneliness of the way, and the lateness of the hour. Her one object was to get away from the whole crew as soon as possible. She knew well enough that the better among them would repent of their passion next day. They were all now inside the field, and she was edging back to rush off alone, when a horseman emerged almost silently from the corner of the hedge that screened the road, and Alec D'Urberville looked round upon them. "What the devil is all this row about, work folk?" he asked. The explanation was not readily forthcoming, and, in truth, he did not require any. Having heard their voices, while yet some way off he had ridden creepingly forward, and learned enough to satisfy himself. Tess was standing apart from the rest, near the gate. He bent over towards her. "Ump up behind me," he whispered, "and we'll get shot of the screaming cats in a jiffy." She felt almost ready to faint, so vivid was her sense of the crisis. At almost any other moment of her life she would have refused such proffered aid and company, as he had refused them several times before, and now the loneliness would not of itself have forced her to do otherwise. But coming as the invitation did at the particular juncture, when fear and indignation at these adversaries could be transformed by a spring of the foot into a triumph over them, she abandoned herself to her impulse, climbed the gate, put her toe upon his instep, and scrambled into the saddle behind him. The pair were speeding away into the distant gray by the time that the contentious revelers became aware of what had happened. The Queen of Spades forgot the stain on her bodice, and stood beside the Queen of Diamonds and the new married, staggering young woman, all with a gaze of fixity in the direction in which the horse's tramp was diminishing into silence on the road. "What be ye looking at?" asked a man who had not observed the incident. "Ho, ho, ho!" laughed Dark Carr. "He, he, he!" laughed the tippling bride, as she steadied herself on the arm of her fond husband. "You, you, you!" laughed Dark Carr's mother, stroking her mustache as she explained laconically, "colon out of the frying pan into the fire." "Then these children of the open air, whom even excess of alcohol could scarce injure permanently, betook themselves to the field path, and as they went there moved onward with them, around the shadow of each one's head, a circle of opalized light, formed by the moon's rays upon the glistening sheet of dew. Each pedestrian could see no halo, but his or her own, which never deserted the head shadow, whatever its vulgar unsteadiness might be, but adhered to it, and persistently beautified it, till the erratic motion seemed an inherent part of the irradiation, and the fumes of their breathing a component of the night's mist, and the spirit of the scene, and of the moonlight, and of nature, seemed harmoniously to mingle with the spirit of wine. Zai, the twain cantered along for some time without speech, Tess as she clung to him still panting in her triumph, yet in other respects dubious. As he had perceived, that the horse was not the spirited one he sometimes rose, and felt no alarm on that score, though her seat was precarious enough despite her tight hold of him. She begged him to slow the animal to a walk, which Alec accordingly did. Neatly done, was it not, dear Tess? He said by and by. Yes, said she. I'm sure I ought to be much obliged to you. And are you? She did not reply. Tess, why do you always dislike my kissing you? I suppose because I don't love you. You are quite sure? I am angry with you sometimes. Ah, I have feared as much. Nevertheless, Alec did not object to that confession. He knew that anything was better than frigidity. Why haven't you told me when I have made you angry? You know very well why. Because I cannot help myself here. I haven't offended you often by lovemaking? You have sometimes. How many times? You know as well as I too many times. Every time I have tried? She was silent, and the horse ambled along for a considerable distance, till a faint luminous fog, which had hung in the hollows all the evening, became general and enveloped them. It seemed to hold the moonlight in suspension, rendering it more pervasive than in clear air. Whether on this account, or from absent-mindedness, or from sleepiness, she did not perceive that they had long ago passed the point at which the lane to Trantridge branched from the highway, and that her conductor had not taken the Trantridge track. She was inexpressibly weary. As he had risen at 5 o'clock every morning of that week, had been on foot the whole of each day, and on this evening, had in addition walked the 3 miles to Chaseborough, waited 3 hours for her neighbors without eating or drinking, her impatience to start them preventing either, as he had then walked a mile of the way home, and had undergone the excitement of the quarrel, till, with the slow progress of their steed, it was now nearly 1. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.